Okay, so we're starting something brand new tonight. We finished the bus tour the last few weeks. The Great Divorce, yes, the bus tour of heaven and hell, which really wasn't heaven and hell, right? And we learned about a bunch of different characters and things like that. We're going to go into a new book of the Bible. And this one,
Ezekiel,
yes.
Really?
We are going to do the book of Ezekiel. And I'm going to tell you that Ezekiel is a unique book. Ezekiel, throughout the ages after it was written in Jewish history, men were not allowed to read it until they're 30 years old.
That's not...
And the reason was because there's a lot of very intricate things in it. There's a lot of difficult things in it to understand. And some things you just have to take at face value of what they are. We're going to see some weird stuff in this book. Really weird stuff.
The giant flaming tornado.
Jiming flaming tornadoes, yes, of course. We are going to see visions that Ezekiel, well, we're not going to see them because we're going to talk about them anyways. The visions that Ezekiel had, and we're going to talk about kind of where he shows up in history, and of course he's famous for what?
Seeing the wheel.
No.
Fuck the battle.
No.
Ezekiel saw the wheel, the dry bones.
The dry bones, you know, the foot bones connected to the ankle bone and all that stuff.
From Sunday.
Yeah. Oh.
Well, he did see the wheel.
He did see the wheel. Yes, he saw the wheel. And we're going to talk about the wheel. Okay? Yes. We're going to talk about the wheel. We're going to talk about a bunch of different things. So we got to dig in a little bit because you got to understand a few things before you get going. Okay? A few things. And we got to start with a man named Josiah.
Yes!
Okay? Now, Josiah was a king. And Josiah was the youngest, the boy king. Okay?
How old was he?
He was 8 years old.
Your Josiah will become king.
Maybe if there was only a kingdom to rule, right? Right.
Okay. Technically, you can pronounce places under your rule.
I suppose you can. You just have to have subjects that'll agree with it.
Okay.
So here's the interesting thing. He's a king. He turns king when he's 8 years old, very young kid. Okay, and he reigns for, I think, 31 years. Okay, so he goes until he's 39. Not very old. When his son takes over. Now, the important part of this that you need to understand is about, yes, here's the famous map, or the infamous map, okay? The Mediterranean Sea is here. The Nile River is here. Of course, Egypt is here. This is the Red Sea. Whoops, red A in there. Red Sea. This is the
Sea of Galilee.
Everybody tricks about that one. Sea of Galilee. Okay, this is the Jordan River. And this is the
Dead Sea.
Okay. Now, Israel... Originally, when Moses comes from Egypt with all of his fellow Hebrews, they cross the Red Sea, they come up through to the bottom of the Promised Land where Abraham walked, and God says, I'll give you this. They march right up to that place, they go in, they send in spies and say, we can't do it, full of giants. We're scared to death. Two of them come back, though, Caleb and Joshua, and say, I think we go in and take it. It's an amazing place. It's a land filled with milk and honey. It's abundant, full of good things. They bring back a bunch of grapes that's so big, one guy can't carry it. They have to put it on a pole and carry it between two people. Okay? That's one bunch of grapes. So big. Now, of course, they don't go in, right? They follow the 10 people and the 10 spies and not the 2 spies. And so, for 40 years, they wander in the desert. After 40 years, Caleb and Joshua, who are the only ones in that generation that survive, take the Israelites into the promised land. They settle some of this side of the bank of the Jordan. They cross in. They fight the Battle of Jericho, the famous Battle of Jericho, right? And they win, and oh, it's wonderful. They go to the very next little tiny city named Ai, and they're defeated. Because Achan takes a few things he's not supposed to after the Battle of Jericho. They repent, they change their ways, and they go and they take over a majority of the promised land, okay, which goes all through here. They battle city by city and take it, and God says, if you go in and take out all those sinful inhabitants, I will give it to you. But they make some pacts. And those pacts are with a group of folks here, which is called the Philistines, which always gives them trouble. And then there's some group of folks up here, and then I think there's a group of folks down here. Ever since they didn't do what God asked them to do, to this very day, in the Promised Land, those particular three areas are constantly being taken from them, and they win them back. And they take them, and they win them back. And they take them from them, and win them back. For thousands of years now. Because they weren't obedient the very first time. Okay, they weren't fully obedient. Now, they had a lot of great victories, and it was amazing. But those three places, okay, I think the Golan Heights is one of them that is always a battle. Okay, and there's a couple of other places there. Those are the three places they battle for. They settle the land. God sends a series of leaders, which are not kings. God does not want them to have kings. He sends them judges. The judges, people get tired of them. Each judge lives through their life. And finally, we get to the end, the very last judge named Samuel, okay, who was a prophet and a judge. And they now say, we don't want any more judges. We want a king. And God says, no, that's not what I told you. You're going to have judges, and that's what it's going to be. No, we want a king. We want to be like all the other nations. They have these big kings. They're great guys. They're big, tall. They beat people in battles. It's amazing. So God gives them a king. And the king is King Saul, and he's a terrible king. He's awful. He destroys a great deal of things. And finally, at the end, God says, I'm going to take King Saul out and put my own king in there. And he puts in King David. King David does an amazing job. He pulls all of Israel together. The southern half, this is what's important now. There's a southern half and a northern half. How many tribes are in Israel?
12.
12 tribes, okay? The northern half contains 10 tribes. The southern half contains one tribe. That doesn't add up to 12, does it?
The Levites.
The Levites are a tribe that lived throughout the whole place, okay? Particularly a lot of them in Jerusalem for the temple, but they live and they are the priests. They don't get land. All these other tribes get land. The southern tribe's name is Judah. That should be famous and recognizable to you. Judah was who?
Jesus.
No.
Oh, well, he was the oldest brother.
No.
One of the brothers.
One of the brothers. Of whom?
I thought you meant the tribe of Judah.
The tribe of Judah came from Judah.
Yes.
Okay, which was a brother of Joseph. Reuben was the oldest, by the way.
Oh, Reuben was the oldest. Okay. Was he like the second oldest?
He was in the line. Yes, he was up there. Okay. All right. So Judah, then yes, Jesus comes from the tribe of Judah. The southern half. David begins as the king of Judah, and then over time, he's able to gather and put together all the 12 tribes as one king, one kingdom of Israel. David has a son, passes the kingdom of Israel over to him, Solomon, remains together. Solomon has a son, Rehoboam, and he destroys the whole thing. The kingdom splits up into northern 10 tribes and southern 1 tribe again, and is no longer, nor ever again, basically, not split up under these kings. Okay? They pass a bunch of kings back and forth. The northern tribes has one after another bad king.
Jeroboam.
Yeah, Jeroboam is the king, the first king for the northern kingdom, Israel they call it. And the southern kingdom named Judah, a very large kingdom. I mean, this was a very large tribe, and these were smaller tribes. And they had a large piece of land, too. The southern kingdom is Rehoboam. Rehoboam, of course, then passes it down to a series of kings. Some are good kings, some are bad kings. So that's where we pick up the story with Josiah. Josiah is a king of Judah, the southern kingdom. So he's got a chance to be a good king. Not all kings in Judah are good. Okay? Now, the northern kingdom has done a very bad job following God. King after king after king after king after king pull the people away. They worship other gods. They get warnings. You're going on a crash course in your life. You're going to end up where God is going to take you into captivity by another nation. And eventually, the Assyrians take over the northern kingdom. It takes a little longer for the southern kingdom, but essentially not much later, the southern kingdom gets taken over by the Babylonians. So King Nebuchadnezzar, now we're going back into your maybe 7th grade history, world history, maybe it's some other. Here's your Fertile Crescent, okay? Okay. In your Fertile Crescent, which are what two rivers?
Tigris and Euphrates.
Tigris and Euphrates, okay. Below this point on the Fertile Crescent, there is an incredible kingdom that is essentially famous for one big king, does amazing things, Nebuchadnezzar. He's the king. He shows up in several books in the Bible. And Nebuchadnezzar is the Babylonian king that takes the people from Judah captive. Okay? Now, Daniel is one of those people, right? He's a famous one. And Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego are those people, too. And they, of course, got another pathway under Nebuchadnezzar. Ezekiel is at the very same time in the beginning. Okay, and he is living amongst the captives. Now, what is Nebuchadnezzar's point? Why does he come and take people?
Slaves.
Usually that's the case, and he may have taken some slaves, but he had something much more grand.
Power.
By what? How do you have power? There's two ways you have power.
Fear.
Okay, which, how do you get fear?
Scaring them.
You kill, so you have like military might, right? So you grow a big army, and you say, if you don't follow us, we'll kill you. That's all. It's easy. So you understand that, right? That's how you grow one way. And how's another way you grow that's a little less grotesque?
The power of love.
No, well.
All of them love you, and they love you as a king, they'll give you more power.
Okay. So he's not starting that way. How's that? And I guess, yes, you're right, but Jesus is really the only king that ever really did that well, okay? So, on earth, you have either power or control by what?
Force. No, that's still
the power. No, that's the power part.
Control
through?
The mind.
Your knowledge. So if you get all the the smartest people in the world and make them in your kingdom and put together all the brightest people, then you win. Right? You get the smartest people. You get the people that know the most. Your advisors all know about prophecies and about things to come, about power and wisdom, and you get all of those people together, then you can win. Okay? And they've heard a great deal about how smart these Israelites are. So Nebuchadnezzar came in and he took all the smart ones. So he did. And he was going to build a special super race called the Chaldeans.
That sounds like a fun thing.
Okay? The Chaldeans. And what he did was created a college of the super smartest people in his day. You bring them all in, all the best ones, you put them all together, and you make them all advisors to the king. And if I'm the king, yes, you two no doubt would be in there. If I'm the king and I have all the smartest guys, then I don't have a problem winning the battles. And people have, the fear can come about too, by saying, hey, you don't want to mess with them. They seem to know every move that you make before you make it. Okay? So, those guys become famous. And actually, to fast forward the story much, much further down the road, a little further, Daniel becomes the top guy in there. Okay? He's the top dog in the Chaldeans. He actually becomes the master of the Magi. They have this team, and some of them, they do different things, not all biblical things, okay? They practice black arts, which is magic and things, some of them, not all of them, okay? But Daniel becomes the master of the Magi, which is the holders and the keepers of the knowledge. Have you ever heard of the word Magi before?
Yeah.
Yes.
Magi.
Yes,
like
the
Magi.
Magi. They came to see Jesus.
They came to see Jesus. Guess what group of people they were?
The Magi.
The Magi, the very same people that Daniel and Nebuchadnezzar started. That group that grew, and they were the keepers of the knowledge. They took all the ancient texts, all of the sacred writings from all the cultures that they could, and put together all the wisdom and said, we're going to learn about all these cultures. And the one that intrigued them the most and why Nebuchadnezzar went after the Israelites was they had this sacred text with so much of it that was right. Everything they'd heard about these Israelites is this powerful God, and they have this Bible. They have these scriptures. They have the stories of Moses and all of these things. And so they hear about it, and they say, we're going to go get it. And it says it's full of prophecy, and those prophecies come true. So they're going to get it, and we're going to learn about it. Okay? So they're intrigued to get these things from Israel, and God uses this to begin to spread the knowledge around the world. And thus, when Jesus is born, these people from the way far east seem to know about Jesus. Why do they know? Well, because the knowledge was spread hundreds and hundreds of years before. Okay? Brought from Israel. Okay? Out to the Fertile Crescent, to the east. Okay? And then spread from there. All right? So we don't know exactly where they came from, because those, no doubt, had spread throughout kingdoms throughout the east, those Chaldeans. But that's where we think that spidered from, that base was from the Chaldeans, okay? So that's the important piece. He has taken the smartest of the smartest from Israel, and he puts them in a place. There's a camp where they stay. They are camped out by the river Kibar. Okay, so somewhere around Babylon, or Chaldee, they call it, okay? The Chaldees. Somewhere around there, there's a big group of Israelites. The smartest of the smart, the best of the best. No doubt the best musicians, the priests, the people who are educated, the artists, they bring them in. And we're bringing all the knowledge we have and put them together here. Okay, and then we're going to train them to be like our people. We're going to pick the best out of those, train them to be direct advisors to the king. And Daniel, of course, becomes the top. Okay? So, by the river Kibar, we start with a man named Ezekiel. His name means strength of God, or strength from God, okay? And he's going to need it, because he's got a rough ride. He's got a tough assignment. He's going to have incredible things happen to him. But he's also going to have a really tough assignment to do. So Ezekiel is going to be handed something today. And it's going to be strange. He's going to do something very strange with it when he gets it. He's going to be told to do something very strange with it. But before we get to that, let's start in Ezekiel. Okay? The book of Ezekiel. As we now kind of know the background of where he is, we're going to go to the book of Ezekiel, chapter number 1, verse number 1. And we'll start to fill in some of the blanks. We'll pick up the story. We know where he came from. We know where he is. He's in a camp with all the Israelites over at Babylon. They've been taken right out of their homes by a military army, stolen, and said, "You're coming with us." Marched across the desert from here all the way across the desert over into the southern part of the Fertile Crescent, okay, into Babylon. Mind you, Babylon was incredible. One of the seven wonders of the ancient world. Hanging Gardens of Babylon were said to be the most incredible place that ever existed. There were multiple stories. You climbed throughout the rooftops of the entire city. There was much of the city, and it was said his city was made of gold. Okay? I don't know how literal that is, but they actually have found pieces and parts of this city that they found and believe that every single building built in his city had his name stamped. Pick a brick out of a wall, it says Nebuchadnezzar on it. Okay? And they found many of these bricks through archaeology. So, incredible guy. He was also a big jerk sometimes. Okay? He really had an attitude, but God put him in his place after a while. Josiah, before we read here, Josiah has a son. Josiah, of course, is a good king, a great king. He returns the temple and the text of the Bible back to the people. They had not read it for years because they had bad kings before that. He finds it, he repents, he changes the kingdom, he does an amazing job, he rules for 31 years, he passes it to his son named Jehoaz, okay, Jehoaz, something like that, who reigns for 3 months. And he's a terrible king. And he's gone. Who passes to his son named Jehoiakim. And Jehoiakim reigns for 11 years, and he's a bad king. 3 months. And he passes it to his son named Jehoiachin, and he reigns for 3 months. Yeah. Okay? And after 3 months of Jehoiachin's reign, Babylon comes in and takes everybody out, including Jehoiachin, who is now a captive for the next more than 3 decades. He's a captive under the king of Babylon. Okay? So that's where we start. Ezekiel's a priest, so he's taken. And he's standing by their side of the river Kibar. Let's start up with verse number 1. 1, 2, 3, 4, please.
Chapter
1, verse 1.
Now it came to pass in their year, in the fourth month, in the fifth day, the month as I was among the captives by the river of Kibar, that the heavens were opened, and I saw the vision of God.
In the fifth day of the month, which was the fifth year of King Jehoiachin's captivity,
the word of the Lord came expressly unto Ezekiel the priest, the son of
Jehoiachin? Oh, no, I'm sorry. Boozle, right? Isn't that it?
Boozy.
There you go. You could name your son that someday if you wanted. Right? It might have a different connotation these days, but... Okay, so it talks about Jehoiachin's captivity. Okay, this is where it happens. It gives you some dates and some times, which if you wanted to work that out in the history of Israel, you could work it out, figure out exactly when and where the things happened. And it does line up with King Nebuchadnezzar, okay, in dates and times. And here he is. He's the son of Buzi, okay, and he is sitting by the river Kibar, and he gets this vision alone. We're going to start right in the vision. What happens in the vision? Verse number 4. Go ahead with verse number 4, 5. We're going to go through verse 14, please.
I looked and I saw a windstorm coming out of the north, an immense cloud with flashing lightning, and surrounded by a brilliant light. The center of the fire looked like glowing metal.
Also, from within it came the likeness of our life. Four living creatures, and this was their appearance. They had the likeness of a man.
And everyone had four faces, and everyone had four wings.
And their feet were straight feet, and the sole of their foot was like the sole of a calf's foot, and they sparkled like the color of burnished brass.
And they had the hands of a man under their wing, and their four sides, and their feet. And they four had their faces in.
And their wings were joined one to another. They turned not when they went. They went every one straight forward. And as for the likeness of their faces, they had four, had a face of a man, and the face of a lion on the right side, and the four had a face of an ox on the left side, and the four also had a face of an eagle. Sorry, keep going. Verse 12. Or verse 11, sorry.
Their faces and their wings were stretched upward. Two wings of every one were joined one to another, and two covered their bodies.
And they went every one straight forward. Whither the spirit was to go, they went, and they turned not from the way.
As for the likeness of the living creatures, their appearance was like a burning coal of fire. And like the appearance of lamps, it went up and down among the living creatures, and the fire was bright, and out of the fire went forth lightning. The creatures sped back and forth like flashes of lightning.
Okay. So there you go. Something you see every day, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. All right, yes. The lion, eagle, ox man. Yes. So from the best we can get, these creatures, that he first describes like a man. And then he says there's four faces on them and four wings on each, and there's arms underneath the wings, but their wings are connected to each other, but some of their wings cover their bodies. They have feet like a calf foot, so a hoof, sort of. So is it like a human? Well, sort of. Maybe that it's upright. I don't know. I didn't see it. These things glow like hot molten metal. Little strange.
That's kind of scary.
Yeah, a little scary. Not something But I want you to notice, as he's seeing them, though he's describing them in detail, he doesn't fall down in front of them. He just describes them. No doubt, they're powerful, they're big, they're nothing like he's ever seen. But somehow he knows not to fall down in front of them. Okay? So there's some of these creatures. Four faces. So what do you think these things are? Four wings, yes.
They're scary.
They're scary, okay. Angels, okay.
That one angel you said with the fire and the wheels and the eyes all over it.
Mm-hmm. Right. So they are creatures. And God can create creatures. Understand this, and this is something we'll see when we get to heaven. If you believe in God, you believe in His promises, you will see things that you've never seen before. Your mind, it says that God has prepared things for us that your mind cannot even comprehend. And so when you describe it, think of yourself as Ezekiel. Here you are. Ezekiel doesn't have an iPad. And Ezekiel doesn't have a computer. Ezekiel doesn't even have a book. He's got a scroll. Okay. And he's seen wheels. And he's seen humans. And he's seen animals. He's seen buildings.
Yeah, so we can only describe things the way that he can based on his knowledge.
Right. He's seen metal workers, right? He's seen metal workers because there are people that work brass and iron way, way back into history. So he's seen them heat things up, so he's that's like metal. Because it's hot and glowing, I guess. Maybe not that it's made of metal, but that he's seen something. So he's trying to relate it to you. He's seen a wheel because he's seen a wheel on a cart. Okay? But he's telling you something specific about them. And what is that something that's a little weird? What don't they ever do?
Speak.
Nope. It's something he says specifically. They don't ever
turn.
Why?
They have four faces. They don't need to
keep things. Okay, all right? But they have really four creatures connected together too, right? With their wings?
Oh, all four of them are connected?
That's what it says. Their wings are...
Oh, I thought it had four wings and two of its wings were together. Two wings are not covering its body. I don't know.
Either way, whatever these things are, they never need to turn. Why is that? Think about that. What everything that God does, particularly in creatures, okay, that He creates, and heavenly creatures... It's got a purpose. And when you have a vision of something like Ezekiel had, God is doing what? Why does He give you a vision?
Understand something.
Going to give you understanding, right? So everything is connected to something. Now you could spend days digging into these visions. Okay, you could figure it out. If you want to talk about it, you could talk about a man having higher intelligence than the rest of the creature world. You could talk about a lion having bigger boldness and ferocity, okay? You could talk about an ox having greater strength, and an eagle having greater sight and the ability to soar and fly. So all of these creatures are superior for one reason or another, and there are people that spend time to talk about all of the bits and parts and pieces of the creature, okay? To say this represents something. God, in His creation, in this creature, has put in it the top of a lot of things. Okay? They've got wings. They don't just have two wings. They have four wings. Okay? And why don't they turn? Because they don't ever make a mistake. Right? They don't need to turn. They move forward. Now, how is that? In our time and space continuum, if I'm going to go there, I have to turn to go there, right? I mean, or walk sideways, which isn't what they do. It says they always go forward. But the representation of a creature that is not living in time-space continuum can always go forward because time and space don't matter to it as a creature. Okay? 2 miles ahead is nothing then. The north or south is nothing. It doesn't mean anything. We as humans live in that world. We're bound by those things. We can't, you know, everything is measured by time with us. We go so fast or so slow. You know, we move so fast or so slow. We turn a direction or that direction. I can't go through the floor unless I break it or break me. Okay, that's right. I'm bound by all those things. I can walk out the window, but it's going to hurt. Okay? And it will only take so long for me to figure that out when I do. We're bound by all those things. But remember, the creatures that he sees are putting on him the impression of many things all at once. They could fill his mind with 1,000 lessons in a second. Just by the impression that they give him by a sight of them. And so he's just trying to describe what he sees, how he understands it, what he sees, and he's telling you, these things, they don't ever turn. I don't know how they don't ever turn, but I'm telling you, I know they don't ever turn. The only thing we can do, if you ever had a dream, and you can tell somebody where you were, but maybe not really. You're like, I know I wasn't there, and I know I wasn't there, but it was like this. Well, how'd you know you were there? I don't know, but I know it. That's the place the dream was, right? You can describe it because you understand it, because the dream gave you an impression to say you're there. Same thing with a vision from Ezekiel, right? I see this thing, this creature, and it's doing things, and I'm going to tell you what it's doing. And you pick out what it means. I don't know. So that's just the first part of the creature. Let's go on, okay, to verse number... Oh, one more thing that picks up in there. These creatures are always ready to attend to God. Understand, when I told you they never make a mistake, the human race made a mistake. Each of us make many mistakes, right? So we need to turn our direction. We need to change and go back. There are angels that were given a choice that we know of that made mistakes, right? So Lucifer and his demons made mistakes. They were not given a chance to turn. They were just cast out. That's God's prerogative to do what he wants. These creatures, they may not have been made to love. They may have only been made to serve. They may have been the perfect creature. Or maybe they were made to love and to serve, and they made the choice to never turn off the path. Okay? I don't know. I don't know that much about them. I only know they're not turning any way they go. All right? Verse number 15. Let me read through a few verses here. Now as I beheld the living creatures, behold, one wheel upon the earth by the living creatures with his four faces. So they got a big wheel on the ground. The appearance of the wheels and their work was like unto the color of beryl. And they four had one likeness. And their appearance and their work, as it were, was in the wheel, in the middle of a wheel. I don't know. I guess, maybe a gyroscope-ish type thing?
Oh.
Maybe?
Like, is that the thing where there's like all these rings and they're on the outsides of each other and they all spin different directions?
Like, maybe, right? But what's he describing? He's describing what he can see. So he sees a wheel. Maybe it's a simple round wheel. Maybe it's something turning in the other way and both ways. What does it do? Where is it? Two things. One part of the wheel is connected to
them
and the other part is on the ground. It's important that it is on the ground, okay? It's important that it's connected to them, okay? And when they went upon their four sides, and they turned not when they went. And as for their rings, they were so high that they were dreadful. And their rings were full of eyes, all four of them, around about. These are the wheels filled with eyes. Okay? Huge wheels. So what do the eyes mean?
They can see everything.
Okay? They see everything. It means they can see everything. They have the ability to see. And when the living creatures went, the wheels went by them. And when the living creatures were lifted up from the earth, the wheels were lifted up. Whithersoever the spirit was to go, they went. Thither was their spirit to go, and the wheels were lifted up over against them, for the spirit of the living creature was in the wheels. So this is not, like I said, you don't look at a wheel. Boy, that's a living wheel. You know it by the vision. The things that God impresses upon you when you see it, and you say, wow, that's somehow that wheel that is a wheel within a wheel, turns, all filled with eyes, touching the earth. When these creatures take off in flight, the wheel goes with them. Okay, so they carry this big wheel around every which way. And it's driven by the spirit of the creature. Okay? So it's not like a joystick that they run it with, right? They think and it moves. All right? They think and that moves and it does what they need it to do. No doubt connected to the eyes and to the motion that it makes. Never turning, always going forward. And I'll just leave it at that because I don't know what it means exactly, except we're not in the same realm. When those went, these went. And when those stood, these stood. And when they were lifted up from the earth, these wheels were lifted up over against them. For the spirit of the living creature was in the wheels. Okay? So these creatures are out there. They are different. And what do they represent? What do they represent? Why do they touch the earth?
Why?
Okay. Maybe more than that. A little more than that. I mean, have you ever seen anything like this?
No.
On Earth? Do you know that anything is like this on Earth?
Probably not. Maybe. Hiding.
Maybe not in our realm, but maybe working in a spiritual realm on this Earth. These things could exist. Okay? But we can't see them, and we can't touch them. Why?
Plane of existence.
Different plane of existence. Different dimension. Okay, we're stuck here. I can't reach out because reaching out means I'm within my time and space. Right? I can reach out 3 feet, but that doesn't mean I can reach in to a spiritual realm. These creatures live in a spiritual realm, which can parallel our realm, which can be in this place because it doesn't occupy space. I know, these are very lofty things to think about, okay? Right. So, these creatures can be affecting our world. Thus, the wheel on the ground. The wheel on the ground. Okay? This, if you think of this creature, think of this. This is God's movement amongst us. Doing things amongst us. Always going forward. Never turning or making a mistake. Always seeing everything. And yet touching the earth. Which means very grounded, understands and sees and feels and touches as we do, Okay? But God's movement throughout mankind, throughout history, represented by these angels. Many faces, many ways to talk, many ways to communicate. All right? But God's movement, that spirit that drives the wheel. Now, what spirit drives the change in people's hearts? Spirit of God, right? The Holy Ghost, the Spirit of God. We're talking in a realm that we don't exist in except for our spirits themselves. And oftentimes we're not very awake to those things. God comes in and wakes us up. And so God came in to Ezekiel's mind and shook him up and said, look here. Look what I'm doing. Things you don't understand. Things you can't even describe. I'm doing them. And so Ezekiel's, what is this? And he's writing it. And he tells these people. When he got up from that vision, what do you think people thought of him? He's a weirdo. Right? Right? Who is this guy? I mean, I knew him yesterday, but clearly he's not had enough food today. He must not have enough of water. I don't know, something. But Ezekiel knows what he saw and understands what he saw to whatever point he can describe it. And he's the only one that God let in on this particular thing to this day. Okay? And so, here is God's will, God's spirit, moving amongst the earth, doing things, very aware of what's going on in this earth. So much aware that he knows the condition of every person's heart. The eyes, all over, all directions, doesn't matter who you are, where you come from, he understands and he sees deeper. Okay, inside of us. And so you've got these creatures. And you can say, wow, those are weird, big creatures. And they are, but they are there to teach. Are they real? Probably. Could they just be a vision? They could be. But I'm guessing God, usually, he likes to show reality. He doesn't like to show things that aren't real. And so when he shows these things, he sometimes only shows a piece. There could be an entire realm of these creatures out and around. You better hope you're on God's side, right? Because God controls all these things. All right? Better hope that at that point. All right? And so over top of it, verse number 22. Over top, that's that the creatures are actually not what this is about. There's more, over top. And the likeness of a firmament was upon the heads of the living creature, was the color of terrible crystal, and stretched forth over their heads above. Okay? So over top of this, there was a great big dome, I'll call it. A firmament, a sky over top of them, held up by these creatures' heads. And on the top of that, okay, verse number 24, and when they went, I heard the noise of their wings like the wings of great waters, as the voice of the Almighty, voice of speech, as the noise of an host when they stood, they let down their wings. And there was a voice from the firmament that was from over their heads when they stood and had let down their wings. So on top of the firmament, on top of the big dome of sky or whatever, glowing, there's a voice on top. Verse number 26. And above the firmament that was over their heads was the likeness of a throne. And as the appearance of sapphire stone. And upon the likeness of the throne was the likeness as the appearance of a man above upon it. So on top of the angels, on top of the wheels, on top of the angels, on top of the dome, there's a throne made of sapphire. And on top of the sapphire throne, there sits a man, or what looks like a man. Okay? This is who? Jesus particularly. This is important to know. There are verses that say, you cannot see God and live. He's too great and too terrible. Now, this whole apparatus that the throne's on top of as he's looking way up in the sky is amazing. And there on top of it sits Jesus. But this is before Jesus came to earth, isn't it? Jesus, or Christophanies, they call them, sightings of Christ, were throughout the Old Testament. Sometimes for minutes, sometimes for a day or two, here or there, a couple hours, depending on what it was. Before Christ was born into this earth, he veiled himself, and that's what's important to know. When Christ came to earth, he was fully God, but he was covered. He did not let people see his glory. For a little bit of time, he opened up that veil for a very short time. You know when that was? The Mount of Transfiguration. It was on top. Moses came down to talk to him. Okay, he started to glow. Peter saw it. I think James and John were there, and he's like, "We got to build a temple. This is an amazing thing." And he's like, "This is you don't get it. I'm going back down. This is who I am." He started to glow and talk with these people that have been dead for thousands of years. They just showed up on the mountaintop. But he's used to transmitting through realms. And they came down to talk to him. And you see, Jesus can do that. He can transmit himself through realms. He's not bound by anything. He transmitted himself into hell on the day he was resurrected and out, because he was in control of it. Okay? So he's not bound. So Jesus shows himself, which is still veiled, because Ezekiel can look at him. He can look at the man way on top. Still veiled to who? To the real power. But it is to show that he's in charge of this whole thing. All of the movement with all the angels and the wheels and the eyes and the wings and the whole thing, and how God moves throughout the earth, is mysterious. You can't tell me I know exactly how God works, because I guarantee you, when you think you got it pinned, that ain't it. You can't tell him, you got to do this, God, for me. Because he doesn't work that way. He works in a mysterious way. And so these weird, mysterious, strange creatures represent his movement on the earth. Never in the wrong direction. Always being held up high. Okay? On top of the top of the top. And yet, he drives the entire work through spiritual drive. Amazing vision to have, okay? And as he sees Christ in this vision on top of the firmament, on top of the dome, all right? And around it, verse number 27, and I saw the color of amber as the appearance of fire around it, with the appearance of his loins, even upward from the appearance of his loins and downward. So he looks like fire on the top of him. And I saw, as it were, the appearance of fire as it had brightness around it, as the appearance of a bow that is in a cloud in the day of rain, which is what? A rainbow. So he's surrounded by a rainbow. He's glowing on fire. It's a little different, okay, than a human. But he's showing a little bit of his glory. This was the appearance of the likeness of the glory of the Lord. And when I saw it, I fell on my face, and I heard the voice of the one that spake. Now, he's looked all the way up through these angels and these wheels and everything, and nothing made him fall down in worship till he saw the man on top. And And when he saw the man on top, he fell down. He said, that's him. Okay? And so, what does he have to say? Well, he's got several things to say. Number one thing he's got to say is, guess what? I have a special job for you. Ezekiel, just for you.
Yay.
These people in Judah, they're miserable and nasty and mean. They hate me. They rebel against me. They push against me. They do terrible things. Ezekiel, I want you to go in amongst them and tell them a message. And you know what they're going to do to you? All the things they do to me. They're going to hate you. They're going to be like briars and thorns to you, constantly pricking and doing bad things to you. They're not going to believe you. They're going to treat you poorly. They're not going to care about you one bit. But you know what I want you to do to them? I want you to love them. That's your job, Ezekiel. I'm going to tell you things to do, and you're going to do them. That's what I put you there for. And oftentimes, when you are really called of God, this is important to know, and it doesn't matter if you're in a job somewhere, or if you're in a church somewhere, if you're in school somewhere. If you are called, you are put in a place for a purpose. And oftentimes, you will have people that are prickly and nasty and mean and terrible around you. And God didn't say, hey, treat them however you want to. Treat them mean like they treat you. How did he say? Do unto others as I would have them do unto you, right? Which means when they treat you bad, you love them back. That's the mission that God calls us to. And that doesn't change. If you want to be a leader, you take those people that are mean and nasty and stab you in the back, and you turn around and you learn to love them. Because that's what Christ did for us. That is Christ's spirit. That is how God moves on the earth. The big angels and the wheels and all of that sort of stuff. He looks at the hearts of those prickly, nasty people and he says, I love you. How can I help you? I can reach out to you. I can touch you. That's the wheel on the earth. Okay? That's where he says, I'm touching that earth. I'm making sure I'm grounded right with you. And Ezekiel's one of those people that's grounded. He's got to live in amongst these people and show love and kindness. So after he explains this all to him, then he says something. Verse number 9 of chapter 2, when I looked, an hand was sent unto me. So there's a floating hand that just shows up down by him. Okay? A floating hand that comes down. And lo, a roll of a book was therein. So that's a scroll, right? Got a hand that floats down right to you. Ezekiel, I got something for you. Here it is. And he spread it before me, and it was written within and without. And there was written therein lamentations and mourning and woe. So what is it? It is a scroll. And as he unrolls it, front and back everywhere is covered with sadness, sorrow, things, funeral songs, and terrible things. Just a terrible thing. Just sad. Woes, it says. The things in this book will make you sad. So what's he going to do? Chapter 3, verse 1. Moreover, he said unto me, son of man, eat that thou findest. Eat this roll, and go and speak unto the house of Israel. Take the book and chew it. Okay. Eat it. By the way, he's not the only one ever to have to do this. Take that scroll full of sorrow and sadness and woe and chew it and swallow it.
Sounds like some of the kids in kindergarten.
Okay. Except this is a pretty sad thing. So what does Ezekiel do? Well, when you're in the presence of God directly, you do exactly what you're told. Verse number 2, so I opened my mouth, and he caused me to eat the roll. And he said unto me, Son of man, cause thy belly to eat, and fill thy bowels with this roll that I give thee. And then I did eat it, and it was in my mouth as honey for sweetness. Okay? So here is his mission. You're going to go to these prickly, nasty people, and they're going to cause you a life full of woes, sorrows. You're going to have to live through these things. You're going to have to eat it, swallow it, live it. It's going to be all through you, Ezekiel. You can't get out of this. This is going to become you till every pore in your body is filled with sorrows. But this journey that you're going to take, when you have done it, will bring you such sweetness in your life, such joy in your life. You will see things beyond what other people will see. You will walk a path that no one else walks. You will have the ability to see what I've given you. And I will bring joy in the midst of the sorrow. Joy in the midst of the sadness. The woe that you eat will turn into rejoicing. Well, that's a tough thing, right? Whoever wanted that one? Ezekiel didn't ask for it. Remember, Ezekiel just got pulled from his family, taken to a different country, and here he is, living as a captive, not even in his own land. But that's where God meets him. God says, I know you need it, and I know you were taken as captive. The country was taken as captive as a punishment for what they did. They would not have God. And so God took them and put them through this press to change them. Okay? Ezekiel's going to have a rough ride, a sorrowful ride, and a sad ride. But it will bring joy. It will bring rejoicing. That taste will be as sweet as honey when he's finished. All right? So now we've begun the journey of Ezekiel, how he sees the visions, how he sees amazing things, and the journey that God is going to put Ezekiel through. Sadness and sorrow with a sweet as honey taste. All right? Thank you very much.